Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning in to this week's edition of the Original Strength Podcast. We have a very special guest this week, Mr. Anders Olsen, probably the world's foremost expert in breathing. I'm very excited to have Anders on the show this week. Anders, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So listen, everybody has a origin story or a backstory. Now, I'm assuming you weren't always a breathing expert, especially with all the wonderful stuff you're teaching now. How did you get started in that?
I think that's one of the main thing that I've been looking for most of my life, a way to unlock the turbo, to reduce my stress, to calm down. And I've changed many things, like improved my sleeping habits, working habits, eating habits. But when I came across breathing, I mean, I've been breathing, of course, all my life, but most likely I didn't do it in a very good way. So when I started playing around with my breath and starting to improve it, slow down my breath, that was the most effective tool I've found to unlock the turbo, to be able to calm down. So that was more than 10 years ago. And when I found that tool, I was hooked. Right. This is going to be my thing. I'm going to put all my energy to understanding the ins and outs of breathing, what it can do for us and what makes up poor breathing and what makes up good breathing and how can I move from poor breathing to good breathing.
So I was reading a little bit about your background. What were you doing before you started this breathing journey?
Yeah, I used to be in the IT industry. I've been an entrepreneur more or less my whole life, for more than 30 years now. And so I started importing computers, I think, in my early 20s. And from that on, I developed an IT company. And then at some point, I think 2002, I sold it and figured that there must be something else in life than just, you know, chasing money, chasing experiences and things. I even though I had financial success, I felt empty inside. So my background is in IT and changing to health. It was also because my son at the time, the more empty I felt inside and wanted to shift my focus, it also coincided with him being sick. He got the Lyme disease.
Oh.
When he was six, and he didn't feel very well for quite some time, I think at least half a year or so. And I, at the time, I was quite naive, I would say, when we came to meet with the doctors, and I thought, well, isn't it like in the computer world, right? It's once or zero. It's either or. You take a test and you find out you're healthy or you're sick. But when it came to my son, I realized that that was not the case. They did a lot of tests and they were a bit vague. They were guessing. They were uncertain. And I think it was doctor number six or seven that told us, yeah, your son have Lyme disease. So anyway, that was my way into it. Of course, as a parent, you want to do everything you can to help your kids, right? So I started to study and try to figure out if there was something that I could do, because I wasn't always satisfied with the answers I got. So he helped me open up the door to the health, and I'm thankful for that. And luckily, he got better and better, and now he's feeling absolutely fine. I mean, now he's 22, so.
Oh, that's awesome.
Long time ago, yeah.
But I am absolutely.
He helped me get into it to health. So that's why I shifted from IT to health.
That's awesome. I'm absolutely convinced we can learn a great deal from our children, either through inspiration or just through observation. But they can teach us a lot. So I've read your book. You've got a book called Conscious Breathing. Mm-hmm. And you've created or developed the Conscious Breathing Method. And I've got to tell you, like, so reading your book and reading your website, so I've written about, I don't know, a handful of books myself, but you could have written them. The things you say are the same. I mean, it's as if you wrote my books or I read yours and then wrote my books. It's the weirdest thing. But you talk about, you always had a sense before when all this was started that there was something more. Mm-hmm. And you were dissatisfied with your with your, you were just kind of frustrated or dissatisfied with where you were, all the IT stuff and all the gadgets and everything, but because there's always this nagging, I think you said it was niggling at you, that there was something more. Can you explain that? What was the something more?
Yeah, well, you know, the feeling you have, you grow up and you have this idea, okay, this is how the world works and this is what I want. And for me, I really was focused. I wanted to earn money. I wanted to show the world, look, I'm smart, I'm bright, I can build my own company. I can be something, make something out of myself. And when I had that, there was this feeling of emptiness, more and more. I remember I could be very jealous of people coming up with some smart ideas. And I realized, in order to do that, you need to have some time to reflect on things. And I because I lived in this to-do list, stress bubble, always tons of things to do. So I never got a chance really to reflect on things, what was happening. I was living in the rat race, more just reacting to the incoming stimuli instead of being able to reflect and take some time off and get a new perspective on things. So that was, I think, what I missed the most, the ability to slow down and really get new thoughts, original thoughts that that I didn't read in the newspaper or that someone else presented to me, but my thoughts running the stimuli, incoming stimuli through my filter.
So you slowed down and you gave yourself time to think, and you through studying your own breath or monitoring your own breath, and you came up with the conscious breathing retraining program.
Yeah.
What is the conscious breathing retraining program?
Yeah, first and foremost, I must say that, I mean, I haven't really invented anything. This is as far from rocket science you can ever get. It's that simple to start with. We talk about in conscious breathing the seven good breathing habits, and it's really simple. But I came up with this concept by studying available literature in yoga and meditation, as well as more scientific literature, and first and foremost, also studying on my own body. It's one thing reading is something in scientific journal, right? It's something completely different to test with your own body. So I always love that, to get the experience. And so that is based, this concept, the conscious breathing method is based on a number of things. So I don't think I have really invented anything. It's more like putting things together, run it through my filter and present it in a way that, I mean, it works for me. Doesn't necessarily need to work for someone else then, but
But you've put together, with your filter and your lens, you have put together a pretty powerful breathing method, correct?
Thank you.
No, I think it's fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, my experience, I've been doing this now for more than 10 years, and of course, I would not have done it unless people would felt similar ways that I have done. Ability to reduce stress, to improve sleep, to deal with conflicts better, to get more energy, to improve narrow airways like in asthma or sleep apnea or COPD. So, yeah, the feedback I get from people trying it out, it's overwhelming. It's fantastic. So, of course, that's the reason why I keep doing it. My goal is to be unemployed, but I'm not there yet. Seems like more people need this.
I think everybody needs to know how to breathe. They'd certainly deserve to, because they were all born breathing really well. And they should be able to maintain that throughout their life.
Yeah, I think it's every person's birthright, get that knowledge, to understand the impact of poor breathing and what makes up good breathing and how to get there.
I have a question for you. So in your journey, you had said that learning how to breathe or remembering how to breathe correctly has helped you dare to be yourself.
Yeah.
What does that mean? How does that work?
That is probably the coolest thing. I mean, it's one thing to reduce stress and improve sleep, but really to be brave. I think to a large extent, fears run our lives. A lot of us are run by fear. And the way I explain it is that a lot of our fears, they are situated in the gut area. We talk about, if we should do something we're afraid of, we may need to go to the toilet because we get an upset stomach or a stressed stomach. And when, so a reason I think why we as a society, why we tend to move the breath higher up in our chest is basically to run away from these fears and unpleasant feelings. We don't know how to deal with them. We don't have the tools. We think, oh, right, I'll deal with those later. But later never shows up. Instead, we engage, you know, in the next activity, in the alcohol or in the cigarette or whatever, to keep those fears at bay. But when we start to breathe diaphragmatically, using our diaphragm and actually exposing this area in the stomach with this movement, I think that helps you to A, get in touch with your fears and unpleasant feelings, and B, to actually reduce them. And of course, we have fears for a reason. It's a good advice to not walk across the street when there are a lot of cars or things like that. Like a lion, could be probably wise to be afraid of a lion. But it seems like a lot of us, we have too many fears, right? We may be afraid of a spider, and it's not like it's that big. In our mind, it's huge, but that fear is not in line with the actual dangers. So I'm not saying that, yeah, sure, breathe with conscious breathing, you are able to get rid of all your fears, including cars and lions, but it's more to get them in, the fears in balance, so you have them in proportion to the actual danger.
So basically, we are wired. It is good to be aware of threats for our survival, but we're not supposed to live in fear of, like, there's a difference between being aware of something that's threatening to you and then being deathly afraid of something.
Yeah,
that could just mess everything up.
Yeah, and I think from that perspective, I mean, fear and this sympathetic part of the autonomic nervous system, that has kept us alive, not necessarily admiring the sunset, but rather to be able to run away from a predator during evolution. So I think the fight-flight system has the highest priority. It's hardwired. So that's why we read the news and we are attracted to the fear-mongering articles. We just want to read them because that, in a way, that system ensures our survival. But the time we live in today, we don't have to engage that much in the sympathetic fight-flight system, I think. So one theory could be that illnesses and diseases come from being too much in the fight-flight system. And the homework we have to do then is to being able to move to the rest and digest system, the parasympathetic part, more often. And I think the breath is a great tool there. You can just a few breaths and you could go from being stressed to being more relaxed, more grounded, more present, and then being in the rest and digest part.
Yes, that's awesome. I read on your website too, you said that fear prevents us from living the life that we desire. That's a powerful statement.
Yeah, but do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think it's fascinating though how something so simple as just focusing on your breath can help you overcome fear. Mental fear, physical fear, whatever you're afraid of, but just gaining control of your breath can take you from that fight or flight down to that rest and digest mode. Could also be, I guess, like relax mode or peace mode, calm mode.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yes.
But no, I think you're right on it. That is fear. I think fear keeps all of us from living the life that we're designed to live, for sure.
Yeah. And I don't know if it is true, but it is possible that fear keeps increasing. You could almost see the corona situation as a full-blown panic attack or fear attack on the whole population. Whenever I talk to someone, if they're in Russia or China or India or US, or because I have a lot of international contacts, there is a lot of fear in all of those places. And it's interesting when you look at it from a breathing perspective, because whenever you feel breathless, I don't get enough air, you start to feel that that is the onset of a panic attack, for example. That's a hallmark. If you, or an asthma attack, you feel breathless, you feel out of air. And what it is not that you lack oxygen, it is that you have too much carbon dioxide, or rather that your breathing center says, oh, it's time to breathe. We are building up too much carbon dioxide. And for example, if you have narrow airways, then, for example, because you breathe through your mouth, or because you breathe too fast, so you create inflammations and particles and swollen tissues in the airways and lungs. And anyway, when there is something going on with your breath, when you feel that you're not breathing fast enough, when you feel this breathlessness, there are studies showing that carbon dioxide, which is then, it's carbon dioxide that controls the breathing, right? It's not the lack of oxygen, it's the carbon dioxide that increases. And when it does, pH is lowered. And when the pH is lowered to a certain threshold, the breathing center in our brain stem is triggered. And an inhale, we inhale, and then on the following exhale, we exhale the carbon dioxide. And the study shows that when the carbon dioxide increases, it triggers the amygdala, the fear center. So we see today that carbon dioxide increases in the atmosphere since the industrialization about 250, 270 years ago. There is a 60% increase in carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, plus the fact that we spend more time indoors, and even though we have ventilation or air circulation, if there are a group of people in a room and all of those people, they exhale 100 times more carbon dioxide than they inhale, there will probably be an increase in the carbon dioxide in that room. And that's when we say, oh, the quality of air is not good enough. But it also will make us to breathe faster, right? Because carbon dioxide triggers the breathing. So if there is more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, more carbon dioxide in our indoor environment, it will trigger faster breathing, which is connected to fight flight, and it will trigger our fear center as well, which is kind of interesting. So in all of this, maybe, I mean, because usually what we do, we run away from these fears. We have this big black garbage bags. We just put the fear, the sorrow, the anger, whatever, and then we just bury it in our body, and they get bigger and bigger, and they start to smell, but we look the other direction. We don't acknowledge them. They are not there. But now they all come to the surface, right, in these times we live in with the corona. We can't escape the fact that we are all afraid, some far more than others. I subscribe to the group that I'm not afraid at all, but I find that interesting. So maybe this will help us to grow as a human species. Maybe this is in every threat there is also an opportunity. And
yes.
So when you're exposed to this stress, you have basically two options. You can go the stress way, or if you're able to maintain your breathing low and slow, even though you feel a slight sense of being uncomfortable, you're able to reset your breathing center. So an analogy for this would be to take a cold shower. I think what that is, I don't know, have you tried that?
Yes.
Yeah, it's quite popular these days, to expose yourself to cold. But for me, more than anything, it's a breathing exercise. You can't really withstand the the cold shower for a long if you don't start to take control of your breathing. And so if you do this journey, I made a video last week where I went into the cold shower and I the normal reaction, oh my God, this is so cold, and we get tense and our breathing is really horrible. And then I illustrated where I was controlling myself, I was coping. So in the first instance, I was fighting the water, which doesn't seem to be a very smart approach, but that is how we normally do. And then in the second, I was coping. I was still tense, not as tense. My breathing was okay, but not good. And then the final, which I think is where we strive in our daily life, in the activities we do, we want to reach the state of harmony. We marry, we get kids, or we run a marathon or whatever. We're chasing that harmony. So the last step then in this shower analogy would be to stand there. It's still the same incoming stimuli. It's freezing cold, but you're able to actually enjoy it. And your body is not tense anymore, and your breath is really calm and relaxed.
Yes, that's awesome. So, but I think fear does exasperate itself, and it's like a snowball rolling down a hill. It just gets bigger, 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 especially when we don't have ways to mitigate it, because stress continues to compound. And so with the coronavirus, people are, and they're flooded with news, and most of the news is, it's not positive news, right? So it's fearful news, it's depressing news, it's anxiety invoking news. Yeah. And there's these ways to, well, wear a mask, wash your hands, stay away from people, but there's not really ways to mitigate the stress of it, or to really help boost your immune system to help protect yourself from it. And breathing is that way that could greatly help lower the stress and boost the immune system and lower the inflammation in the body, so that you have a better chance of
whatever. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's all the things you mentioned, they're all very defensive strategies. And it's a bit surprising, I must say, that on the top of the list, what to do, that shut your mouth and breathe through your nose, that it's not on the top of the list, because
yes,
it's really a very efficient filter that we have.
It's the design. That's what it's designed to do, right?
It is, yeah. But yeah, that's the world we live in, and not. I mean, when I get asked, who are your customers? Well, I tell everyone who's breathing is a potential customer. But then, on the other hand, it's not for everyone. It's only for those who are prepared to do the job. It doesn't come like if you have a headache and you take a headache pill. This is not what it's about. It's for you to start to become aware of your breathing in your daily life, and start to improve it, because you have the list. Okay, this makes up good breathing, and this is what I'm striving to. The 1,000 breaths I take each hour, I try to take more and more and more of them in line with the good breathing. And not all people are prepared to do that work. They just want the blue pill, right?
I understand. Yes, but and there are some,
which is fine.
But there are some that. Yeah. There are some people that really want what you have discovered, though. And I think the fruit of it is worth the journey to get there as well. For instance, you wrote something I thought was beautiful. You said, right now, you and your body are best friends. And that you only do things that you like to do and that make you both feel good. What, can you explain that? I mean, that sounds beautiful to me, and I think I get it. But what do you mean by that?
I mean, I've spent most of my life making other people stressed and making myself stressed, and including running over my body. For me, I lived in my head and I set this and that goal, and it was all about reaching those goals. And my body, it was just a simple tool that should help me reach those goals. And whenever I had reached it, oh, great, that was nice. Let's set a new goal. So it was always, always, always on the go. I couldn't care less about my body and my body's needs. And I think most of us know maybe not if you're in your 20s, but as we grow older, we start to realize that we also have to take care of our body. And if we don't listen when it whispers, we will be forced to listen when it screams and yells at us. And I'm happy to have done that journey to realize that, yeah, my body is actually my best friend. So, I mean, instead of working out to the point where I taste the blood in my mouth, I rarely do that, even though I still have that competitive edge, which is kind of nice to engage in now and then. But overall, it's more, okay, what are we up to today? And what is the status? What do I want, the brain? What do I want, the body? And can we sync those? So we're like more like a team. It's kind of nice.
So I read a story about you and your buddy, your body, where you both ran a half marathon with duct tape over your lips.
Yeah.
What was that like? Just breathing in and out through your nose with your lips taped shut for a half marathon.
Yeah, it was an interesting experience. But actually, it was not only over my lips. It was the whole way around my head. And I put it on 10 minutes before the race, and I hadn't done it before. So I remember taking a couple of kind of claustrophobic breaths, thinking, oh, gee, I'm going to do this for 21 kilometers. But it was my first race ever. So it wasn't a big race. I think we were a few hundred, but somehow I ended up almost at the front. So when the starting signal went off and we started running and people started to pass me, I got, what is this? I was used to run on my own. So I tried to keep up with them, which was not a very good strategy. But the reason why I had it a full way around my head was because I decided I should not drink anything. So I wanted to test that because, you know, there are studies saying that when we exhale through the mouth, we lose more water, 42% more water exhaling through the mouth compared to through the nose. So you see a lot of these people exercising, right? And they breathe like that and they drink all the time. So I wanted to see if that was possible. And it was no problem, actually. Well, I mean, I came up with the idea to run this half marathon a month before. So the time for me to prepare was quite limited. And when I looked back, I realized, oh, in 1 year, I'd probably not run more than a half marathon in total. So I wasn't fully prepared. So I decided, okay, I have a month to get in shape. So I figured I have to run one half marathon before the actual race to make sure that I can do it. So after 14 days, I actually ran a half marathon. And then it was bright sun and it was hot and I didn't drink anything. And I even took my bike. So it was probably around a 3 hour exercise I did, a total of 3 hours, and I didn't drink anything. So I thought, well, the race won't be a problem because I know that I can do that. But what I didn't factor in was the stress of the actual race. So if there was something I may should have done, it should have been to drink something during the race because I got a bit exhausted the last couple of kilometers.
But that's how you learn, right?
Exactly. That's how we learn. So I don't mind that, not at all. So it was a great experience. And people thought I was stupid, of course. And
I get it.
Yeah.
I'm always the weird guy in that.
Yeah.
But for all of you people that are always writing in, is it possible to run a marathon or a half marathon or even 100 yards with only breathing in and out through your nose? Yes, it is possible. And Anders has proven it.
Yeah. And actually, I've done a couple of studies with people. One was at a CrossFit gym. There were 10 people in the study. And they were on average, they were 39 years old. They were exercising 5 times per week. And, you know, CrossFit, it's known for the diversity. They do all kinds of activities and that they also time the workouts, right? So they were used to timing. So they were used to. So we did a study where once they did a specific training regime, I think it took them about 20, 25 minutes. And on the Borg scale, which is from 6 to 20, where 20 is the maximum, absolute maximum capacity you're able to. I think they were on about 19 when they graded how tired they were. So they did it first with normal breathing, which meant that they were breathing like this. And then they had their results. And a week later, they were taping their mouth. And I was actually shocked because I thought, okay, these guys, they are competitive and there will be a conflict between what their mind want and what their breath will allow. So I think at least 2, 3, or 4 people will not be able to fulfill the set of exercises. But they actually were, all of them, and even they were able to compete at the same level. I think it was a difference of 1 or 2% less, which was virtually nothing because right. Their experience of nasal breathing only was extremely limited.
That so, is awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's to a large extent, it's a mindset to have that. No, it's impossible. I need to use my mouth. But with nasal breathing, we replace quantity with quality. So, but then the even more interesting thing is because I've talked to a lot of athletes and tried to get a lot of athletes to try this, and these guys at the CrossFit gym, I had a lecture and we went through all the benefits of nasal breathing and rhythmic breathing and slow breathing, which they get with nasal breathing. And still they didn't continue. Most of them did not continue. And my explanation for that is twofold. One is that a lot of us are adrenaline junkies, especially many that exercise. And when you do nasal breathing, you actually increase carbon dioxide. And as a study showed that they had a group of medical students, they were hyperventilating and they were measuring the levels of adrenaline. And they noticed when they hyperventilated normal air, which meant that they took 36 liters of air per minute, which is quite a lot. Normally it's only about 6 liters. So they were hyperventilating quite a lot and they lowered the carbon dioxide levels by half. And the adrenaline levels rose by 360%.
Oh, man.
But when they did the same study again, and this time the inhaled air was spiked with carbon dioxide. So they were hyperventilating, but the carbon dioxide levels were almost unchanged because they inhaled 5% carbon dioxide versus normal, which is 0.04%. So they inhaled 100 times more. So that meant that the carbon dioxide level were stable. And when they measured the adrenaline, it was unchanged, meaning that we get an adrenaline rush when we huff and puff. Right. So if we're after that kick, we may not know it. We may not be aware of it. But if we're after the adrenaline rush, the nasal breathing may deprive us of that kick. So that's the one thing why many people don't like nasal breathing. And second thing is that, as we talked about before, it's connected to the amygdala, the fear center. So when you increase the levels of carbon dioxide, you start to get in touch with these unpleasant feelings, and that's not so nice. But I think we need to do that in order to overcome the fears or whatever stresses or traumas we have. So... So,
but based off of that study and what you're finding is you are thinking that some people are addicted to the fight or flight.
I mean, what is your experience? What do you think?
No, I mean, that makes sense. I've never thought about it that way because I'm always thinking, why would you want to always be in fight or flight when you want really, because your body recovers and repairs itself and feels better with lower inflammation and everything. All the good stuff happens, and most of the good stuff happens in rest and digest.
Yeah. I mean, I can just go to myself and see when I started to improve my breathing and then starting to feel better and able to calm down more and more. I still had a habit where I started to realize that, okay, I'm creating this. I'm creating the situation where, for example, I'm about to get late to a meeting and then I get the adrenaline rush. I don't want it up here because I'm the calm, cool guy, right? But somewhere deep inside me, I still have that need for that rush. But it was not until I had got that awareness, right, I'm creating that situation.
So, that's brilliant.
So for me, it was, I call it, you go to Africa and they call it the Big Five. You want to see an elephant, a lion, a giraffe, I think. Yeah, whatever, five animals. For me, it has been the Big Five. Whenever I have a meeting and I postpone it preparing and then I postpone and then 10 minutes before I have to go, the Big Five for me is to go to the toilet, it's to take a shower, it's to shave, it's to iron a shirt and it's interesting how I think I'm not alone in that, in creating that. Can you see where I'm coming from?
That? Absolutely. I think that's brilliant. You've actually just enlightened me. Now I'm starting to understand myself better, which leads me to my next question for you. And I thought this was amazing. You wrote that since you've started all this breath work and you've learned all you have and you've been teaching the conscious breathing method, that you have a better contact with your inner guide.
Right.
Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, there is even research talking about the gut brain, right? We see that we have a lot of neurons in our gut area. And a lot of us, we tend to live in our head. And I think it's like you know, trying to navigate with only one eye and one ear or like blindfolded completely. I think we also have a lot of wisdom in our body. And so I tend to say that with the breath, if you think of a breathing anchor that goes down and down, lower and lower in your body, you're able to connect your mind brain with your heart brain and your gut brain. So you take the elevator down into your body. And we actually do have the vagus nerve that is in touch with all of these. I mean, the vagus nerve is from the Latin word, I think it's Latin or Greek, wanderer. It's a wandering nerve that's in touch with all the organs in our body except the adrenals, where we create the stress hormone. So it's basically the boss of the parasympathetic nervous system. So the vagus nerve, when we slow down our breathing, seems like the activity in the vagus nerve is increasing. So about 80% of the information goes from the organs, from the liver, from the heart, from the gut to the brain. And if we slow down the breathing, we allow more information to get to the brain. I think we can think of it as a switch. If I'm more tense, if I'm stressing, if I'm performing, I'm slightly more in the sympathetic part, and the brain then, when the brain should make a decision, take in more information from the sympathetic part of the nervous system. And when you slow down, you will be able to get information from the organs, from your gut, from your heart, and thereby, obviously, when the brain should make a decision, it has a much bigger, more information to base the decision on. So it's become a wiser decision.
That is awesome.
Yeah, so for me, the conscious breathing method is not only a health project or a performance project, it's also a peace project, because at the end of the day, if we want peace of the on the outside, it starts with peace on the inside. So I feel that you're able to achieve that peace with the low and slow and rhythmical breath.
Yes, that is awesome. Thank you. This has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much, Anders, for being on the show with me.
Thank you. Thank you, Tim.
So if people want to find out about Anders, they can read your wonderful book, Conscious Breathing, and they can go to your website, consciousbreathing.com. Is that correct?
That's right. Consciousbreathing.com. Yeah.
And if there were one last thing you could tell anybody to make their life better about breath, like the most important, most powerful thing, just off the top of your head or right out of your gut, out of your center, what would it be?
Yeah, well, to close your mouth is the obvious one, because good breathing starts in the nose, but that is maybe not enough. Also, to prolong the exhalation, the key is in the exhale. Inhale is tied to activity, if I'm exaggerating a little bit, and we sigh in relief, the danger is over. Exhale is tied to relaxation. So prolong the exhalation slightly while still maintaining a relaxed breath.
So keep your mouth shut and breathe low and slow with a prolonged exhalation.
Yeah, exactly.
Right on. Anders, thank you so much for being on the show this week.
Thank you, Tim.
All right, guys, thanks so much for tuning in. Don't forget to check out Anders' great book. You need to read it, Conscious Breathing, and check out his website, consciousbreathing.com. Have a great week.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of the Original Strength Podcast.